Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah. Radio Theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
The special three-hour presentation
with Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, about 7 minutes after 11 p.m. right here on the WGN Radio Theater, on the greatest radio station in the world, WGN AM 720, broadcasting all across the country, parts of Canada as well. And to my right, the vivacious Lisa Wolf is here. What's up, Lisa?
Hey, Carl, what's up?
I just saw you. It was like, seems like about maybe, I don't know, 20 hours ago?
Something like that.
About that.
I think we're just still here.
You look exactly the same.
I know.
Oh, man. That's good.
I don't know if that's good or bad. That's good.
You're not aging, and that's good.
Right.
Mike Estella is here, our executive producer. What's up, Mike?
Hello, everybody.
And good to see you. And then Shante Garth, our producer, is in the booth. We have Esmeralda Leon in the traffic hut, and we have Roger Badish up there in the newsroom, and we have a fun contest that we are going to kick off right now.
Yeah.
So our text in line is 312-981-7200. The first person that gets Roger's song right, my song right, Lisa's song right, and Esmeralda's song right, this is from 1971. Our favorite songs, and you could just go online. You can just look up 1971 greatest songs.
Are you going to tell them how to do it?
No, I'm just saying. You want to know what songs are from 1971. All of us picked out a song.
You don't have to get them all right. You just have to get one right.
If you guess any of them, but you have to say who you think. Like if you say a certain song, you have to say, well, this is Lisa's song or Carl's song.
And we all have different songs, so
Esmeralda's
I can attest to
song
that.
And Roger's song. And if you get it right, if you're the first person to text in, you're going to win a 4-CD set of the Twilight Zone radio dramas.
Right, Roger?
Right?
That's right. That's right.
Or a whole program series of some sort.
We got it all figured
like
out. We got it all figured out now. And then we'll play a little bit of the songs as well. And also tonight we have three classic radio shows. We have Gunsmoke from 1952. Philo Vance Detective from 1950, and the Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis Show from 1952 with their special guest, Marlena Dietrich. That's all brought to you by Cat's Pride.
Dum, 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 dum. It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow!
This actor stars in the upcoming TV show Future Man about a janitor who battles against an intergalactic invasion.
Speaking of Twilight Zones, you know, this actor starred in several Twilight Zone radio dramas for me.
That's the only clue we're going to give you.
No, we'll give you another clue. What do they win?
They're going to win a Lou Malnati's gift certificate for $25. Best
wow.
Pizza.
All right. The number to call to enter this contest is 312-981-7200. Now, here's a hint. This actor played Robert in Pineapple Express.
We're not going anywhere. I'm coming back in a minute. You know what I'm coming back with?
No, what?
I'm coming back with a gun. You better be out of here.
All right. Who is that? Great actor. He's in a lot of stuff. And he starred in some Twilight Zones. 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after these words.
Welcome back. This is show 204 of the WGN Radio Theater. We are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play that again.
We're not going anywhere. I'm coming back in a minute. You know what I'm coming back with?
No, what?
I'm coming back with a gun. You better be out of here.
All right. Who is that great actor? Right, Lisa?
Right. We have Eddie on the line. Hey, Eddie.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Glad you called in.
Thank you.
Good. So who is that fine actor?
Ed Begley Jr.
Ed Begley Jr. is exactly right. I hope you love pizza.
I love it.
I do, too. You have won a Lou Malnati's gift certificate for $25. It's home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza and my
awesome.
Very favorite. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at loumalnatis.com. Have a great night and have a great pizza on us.
Thanks a lot.
Take care, Eddie.
Thanks, Eddie. All right, Eddie knew it. He knew it was Ed Begley Jr. You know, Ed Begley Sr. was in a lot of these radio shows. He was
that.
A big radio actor.
Yep.
Ed Begley Sr. And his son loves doing radio too, was happy. When I contacted him, he was like, oh my gosh, my dad did tons of radio. I would love to do a radio Twilight Zone.
Nice.
And he did, I think he did 5 or 6 shows for me. Great guy. All right, it's time now for our first classic radio show. But I want to remind you that the text-in line is open. You can text in at 312-981-7200. You can text in to enter our song contest where me, Lisa, Esmeralda, and Roger have each chosen our favorite song from 1971. And if you can get it right, if you're the first person to text in with the right answer, you're going to win a 4-CD set of The Twilight Zone.
Right, and I'm looking at your text, and I'm not going to text you back unless you're a winner, and at that point we'll close the text for that one person.
Yeah.
So if I don't text you back, you didn't get it right this time.
You can enter as many times as you want.
Right.
312-981-7200. Okay, it's time for our first radio show. It's the best Western of all time, if you ask me. This was incredibly successful on radio and on television. It's Gunsmoke. It was an adult Western created by Norman McDonald and John Meston. Came to radio in 1952, lasted all the way to 1961 on the radio dial. This was stories in and around Dodge City, Kansas, in the mid to late 1800s. And the main person around these shows was Marshal Matt Dillon, played by William Conrad. He had a deputy, Chester Proudfoot, played by Parley Bear. And then Howard McNear was Doc Adams. Georgia Ellis was Kitty Russell. And this series was adapted for television in 1955. It lasted all the way to 1974 on TV with an entirely new cast. But we have a terrific radio episode from December 13th, 1952. This is called Post Martin. It stars William Conrad. Here's part one now of Gunsmoke.
Around Dodge City and in the territory on west, there's just one way to handle the killers and the spoilers, and that's with a U.S. Marshal and the smell of gun smoke. Gunsmoke, starring William Conrad. The story of the violence that moved west with young America. The story of a man who moved with it. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
Mr. Dillon?
Yeah, Chester.
You want to see the prettiest sight north of the Pecos?
Huh? Sight?
Come over here to the window and look what's a-coming down the street.
Not if it's anything besides trouble, it'll surprise me.
She must have come in on the Santa Fe from the east.
Wow.
Say, I think she's coming here.
Yeah, it looks that way.
My, I should have shaved this morning.
Or even yesterday morning.
Now, what could a lady like that be doing in Dodge City? Say, maybe she's going to work in one of the saloons, Mr. Dillon.
I hope not, Chester. Good morning, ma'am.
How do you do? I'm looking for the United States Marshal.
Well, I'm the, my name's Dillon, Matt Dillon.
I'm Catherine Blair, Mr. Dillon.
Oh, it's a pleasure, Miss Blair. May I introduce my deputy? This is Chester Proudfoot.
How do you do?
I just got in on the train from Boston, Mr. Dillon.
Oh?
The station master said that you might be able to help me.
Well, I'd be glad to.
I'm looking for my brother, Martin Blair.
Why, say, Mr. Dillon...
Chester, will you punch up that fire? It seems a little chilly in here.
Chilly? Yeah, sure. Right away, Mr. Dillon.
chilly. I'm on the verge of a heat stroke.
Do you happen to know my brother, Mr. Dillon?
Yes. Yes, I know him.
Oh, good. Then you can tell me where to find him.
Well, I'm not too sure that I can. You see, he moves around a lot.
Yes, I know. He left home and came out west 2 years ago. And every time he's written us, it's been from a different address. He's always been that way. Restless, I guess you might call him.
Yes, yes, I guess you might.
Mother's always thinking he might get into trouble out here by himself. But I tell her not to worry. He's young yet. He'll grow out of it.
I see. Meanwhile, though, you'll need some place to stay, I imagine.
Well, yes, I suppose there's a hotel.
I think the Widow Markham may have an extra room. You'd be better off there than at a hotel. Your baggage at the station?
Yes.
Chester, will you go to the station with Miss Blair and then take her over to Widow Markham's and get her settled in a room?
Sure thing, Mr. Dillon.
This is awfully nice of you.
Not at all. And, Chester, will you explain the situation to Miss Markham? I mean that we don't know where Miss Blair's brother is at the moment, Chester.
Yes, sir. I'll explain it to her, Mr. Dillon. After you, ma'am.
Oh, thank you. You're very kind, Mr. Dillon. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Jack? Wake up, Jack.
I'm not asleep, Marshal. What do you want?
A jail cell usually softens a man up.
Not this one, Dillon. Not now or 20 years from now.
Yeah, I know.
You want something, or are you just making conversation?
Your sister's in town, Martin.
Kathy? Kathy's here in Dodge?
She just left the office. She's looking for you.
What'd you tell her?
Nothing. Yet. Seems like a fine girl.
You gotta get her out of here, Dillon. Don't let her find out. Get her on a train and get her out of here.
Huh? Why?
Maybe I'm no good, but there's no reason why Kathy should pay for it.
It's got nothing to do with me.
Then you won't help. You won't keep her from finding out?
I don't know if I can, Martin. But I'll think about it.
Oh. Evening, Mr. Dillon.
Hello, Chester. Anything come up?
No, sir. It's been the quietest night in weeks.
Yeah, no trail herds in town. I guess that's the reason.
Miss Blair's all right, I suppose?
Yeah, she's all right, Chester.
Have you told her about her brother, Mr. Dillon?
Well, I told her that he's out of town, and we're trying to get word to him.
The truth's bound to get to her somehow, sooner or later.
Yeah, I know. Only reason it hasn't already is because everybody in town knows him as Boston Jack.
Yes, but his real name will come out at the trial next week, though.
Well, I've been trying to get her to leave before then, go back home, but she won't leave until she sees him.
Mm-hmm. He's sure going to go hard with her when she finds out her brother's guilty of cattle rustling.
And murder, and horse stealing. And this time we got a witness.
Yes, sir. I don't rightly see how you can keep her from finding out, Mr. Dillon.
Well, come on, Chester, let's have a talk with Martin.
Nice night, Mr. Dillon.
Yeah, it's fine. Great night for taking a walk. Don't you think so, Martin?
Anything's better than rotting in that cell.
Well, where did you expect to end up?
All you got is old man Hawk's word against mine. He's lying.
The jury will believe him.
If he could see me so plain, how come he couldn't tell you who was with me?
It was dark. He saw your face in the gun flesh when you shot his foreman in the back.
That's a lie.
As far as that's concerned, I know who was with you, but I haven't got a case against him. Red Poley. Wasn't it?
I wouldn't know. I wasn't there.
Mm-hmm. Well, suppose we leave it to the jury.
Here's the way to Markham's place, Mr. Dillon.
Yeah. All right, Martin, let's get it straight now. You're here because you want to keep your sister from knowing the truth about you. Now, we're going in there and talk to her. Then you're going back to jail. You know the story I'm planning to tell her.
I know.
I just want to make one thing clear. You are going back to jail. Chester will stay on the front porch and cover you through the window, and I'll be inside with you, also wearing a gun. Don't try anything foolish. I wouldn't want to kill you in front of your sister, but if it comes to it, I'll do it. You understand?
Sure, I understand.
All right, let's go.
I'll be there at the first window, Mr. Dillon. The parlor's on the left.
All right, Chester. Heads up, Chester.
Yes, sir.
Good evening, Miss Blair.
Oh, why, Mr. Dillon?
I've brought you a visitor.
A visit? Martin.
Hiya, Kathy.
Oh, Martin.
Here now. Take it easy.
Oh, it's been so long. Oh, Martin, why didn't you write?
Well, you know how it is, sis. Say, maybe we could all go inside, huh?
Oh, of course. Come on in. Come in. Oh, I couldn't imagine who was knocking. Mrs. Markham has gone to bed and... Oh, here. Sit down, both of you.
Thank you, Miss Blair.
Oh, Mr. Dillon. Where on earth did you find him?
Well, I guess I better confess to you, Miss Blair. I knew all along where he was.
What?
The only trouble was I just couldn't produce him.
I'm afraid I don't understand you.
Well, you see, Martin's been doing some work for me. Sort of secret work, you might say. We're trying to dig up evidence on a gang of cattle rustlers around.
Oh, just wait till Mother hears about that. Oh, and she was so worried about you.
Yeah. It's quite a job.
It's pretty hard for your brother to get away from the gang without stirring up suspicion. In fact, he's only got about an hour this evening.
Oh? But you will manage more time in the next day or so.
I'm afraid not, sis. I may not be able to get away again for a month.
A month?
In fact, I've been thinking it over, and I think the best thing you can do is to take a train back home right away.
But I just got here, Martin.
It's no place for you, Kathy.
He's right, Miss Blair. Dodge City's no town for a girl alone.
But I came all this way to see Martin.
It's like I told you, though, sis. It may be a month before I can manage to get away again. Tell you what. After this job's finished, maybe I can get back east for a week or so.
Oh, Martin, if you only could. We'd all be so happy.
Well, I can't guarantee it, but I'll sure try.
I'll admit I'm a little nervous here. Why, the very first thing Mrs. Markham showed me was a revolver she keeps hanging out there in the hall. In case of intruders, she said. Good heavens.
Well, this is the frontier, Miss Blair. The law is still pretty much for the man who shoots first.
Except sometimes.
Yeah.
That sounds awful. Martin, you will be careful, won't you?
I'm always careful.
I suppose I had better take your advice and arrange to leave in the next day or two. But meanwhile, we have an hour at least. Tell me about yourself, Martin. Tell me everything you've been doing.
All right, that's the first portion of Gunsmoke, going back to December 13th, 1952, with Post Martin starring William Conrad. And I am shocked, Lisa. Someone already got my song. So out of the four songs, someone guessed my song. And I didn't think anybody was going to get my song.
We thought yours would be the only one that wasn't thought of.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
All right, so here's my song. Bringing back memories, Lisa.
Oh, yes.
Mike?
Yeah, Mike.
No.
Yeah, I told you, I had like a whole like kind of lair in my parents' basement. I had like the disco ball.
I could see the strobe lights going.
At a disco ball. I had incense, you know, and I had my Radio Shack, which was, you know, top of the line back
yeah.
then. At a Radio Shack turntable and cassette player.
Yep.
And I had this album, Isaac Hayes.
You can tell everybody what this is.
This is the theme from Shaft, which was one of my favorite television shows. And this is my favorite song from 1971, the theme from Shaft. I didn't think anybody would
get
that.
Did you have the gold chains and the open oh. shirt and the two-inch high heels?
That's a silly question.
Yeah, I know, of course.
That
but
is
just
a
reminding
very
people.
Silly question
yeah.
to ask
okay.
me.
Yeah.
I told you what happened to my gold chain. I told you I had a gold chain with a Italian horn on it,
mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
a girl basically swindled me out of that. She
yeah.
told me she liked me. She said, hey, if you let me wear your gold chain, I'll be your girlfriend. I gave it to her, and that was the last I ever saw of her. Never even got a kiss. Never saw that gold chain and horn again. She's out there somewhere. I am going to find that girl.
You're still stalking her?
One of these days. I have four detectives on her. Shaft, actually.
Shaft
I hired
is one of them.
Shaft to find her. All right, so that's my favorite song. We still have Lisa's favorite song. And here's the interesting thing. Lisa and Esmeralda chose the same song.
Ooh.
We did. That
they chose the same song.
Completely coincidental.
That's
yeah,
cool.
So that's a hint, folks. Lisa and Esmeralda chose the same song, and then Roger has his own song. So the text in line, 312-981-7200. Three more chances to win Twilight Zone radio drama CDs. All right, let's take, well, we have a quick break, then it's news, so stick around. All right, we're back, and this is the WGN Radio Theater. I am your host, Carl Amari. To my right, the vivacious Lisa Wolf. Boy, your dimples, Lisa, they seem to grow more every single day.
It's just a smile, maybe that's growing.
Yeah,
I don't know.
You need to use that wild root cream oil.
Yeah, I know I do. Can't
you
know, tell?
Because you could use that as spackle in those dimples. So, hey, you know what? We have classic radio. We've been listening to Gunsmoke. We have Philo Vance Detective coming up in a little while. Then it's the Martin and Lewis Show, Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis. People don't realize they had a radio show. They were very famous on the Colgate Television Hour. They had a series on TV, and then they were very popular in the movies. Then they broke up, and they went their separate ways, and Jerry Lewis became one of the most successful comedian and directors and producers of all time, really. And then Dean Martin, one of the most popular singers. He had his own television show. Remember that show, Dean Martin show with the Gold Diggers?
Oh, I remember
that was
the
a
Dean
great
Martin show.
Yeah, and then he did the roasts. Remember
yeah,
the Dean Martin
I do.
Roast? Dean Martin, very talented. I actually think Dean Martin was every bit as good as any of those top guys as far as a singer. You know, as good as Frank Sinatra or Perry Como or Bing Crosby. I think Dean Martin, he had really an interesting tonality to his voice. I love Dean Martin's voice.
Well, it's a long time ago.
I love your voice too, Lisa.
Aw, thanks.
You know,
Carl.
Just very mellifluous.
That's a big word for
I know.
You.
Let me see how many syllables.
Four.
Ma, lif, lu, what? You're right. Again.
Darn
you're
it.
Always right.
Darn
she
it.
Is always right. Well, pretty much always right.
Somebody just texted in that my voice is monotone. Do you think that it is?
Monotone?
What?
Nah.
I don't know.
It's very...
up and down.
Kind of makes the fillings in my teeth fall out once in a while. Yeah. But other than that, it's really great.
All
it's
right.
nice.
Well,
I like
know.
It a lot. Yeah.
Everybody's got
luckily,
something
I don't
to
have
say.
Any fillings in my teeth. They've already all fallen out because I've
never
been on
had
the air with
filling.
You for so long.
Never, ever,
yeah.
ever.
Never?
I'm clean.
All right. Well, we're listening to Gunsmoke. You can text in if you have a guess as to what Lisa's favorite song from 1971 is. It's the same song that Esmeralda chose.
We are on the same wavelength.
And then you have Roger's song. that sounds like a song itself, Roger's song.
Yeah, kind of like Nadia's theme.
Yes, that's exactly right. what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Or Brian's song.
Brian's song.
That wasn't a song. That was a movie. Yeah.
Right.
But it sounds similar.
Get it together, will you? Jeez.
Hey, get it together
no,
right
that's,
now.
Over me. All right, let's get back now to Gunsmoke.
Say, it's cold in here, Mr. Dillon.
Yeah, you better get a fire started, Chester. I'll take Martin back and lock him up.
I could use a little heat back in that cell.
You got plenty of blankets. Well, come on, let's go. Now, you walk ahead of me.
Dillon, suppose the jury brings in a conviction. What's the sentence going to be?
That's not up to me.
I'm just asking for information. It means hanging, right?
Probably. All right, stand right there while I open the cell.
I don't want much to hang, Marshal.
Nobody does. All right, Martin Geddens.
Slow and easy, Dillon. Put your hands up slow. Good. Now keep them that way.
Where'd you get the gun?
In the hall at Mrs. Markham's. I slipped it under my coat when I was kissing Kathy goodbye. I'll take your gun now, Dillon. Thanks. Feels good to be holding a pair of guns again.
You won't be holding them long.
Maybe. One thing, though. If you take me again, you'll have to take me dead.
Any way you want it.
In a cell, Dillon. Come on, move. Tell Chester goodbye for me, will you? I think I'll just go on out the back way.
What about your sister?
I guess she wouldn't want to see me hang either. When you come right down to it. So long, Dillon. Doggone it, Mr. Dillon. I know one of these keys is supposed to fit.
Chester, all I've got to say is that it better fit.
Yes, sir. It'll... Well, that's not it. It would be a fine how-to-do if we had to call in a blacksmith to get you out of your own jail.
Chester.
It'd be sort of like the time...
Never mind, Chester. Just get the door open.
Yes, sir. Oh, I know how you feel, all right, Mr. Well, I declare. There you are, Mr. Dillon.
Come on. I'll get the other gun out of the office safe.
Fine thanks you get for trying to help people.
A man gets careless and then he winds up in a jam like this. Hey, let's see now. Right, 27. Left, 69. Right.
You're sure going to be hard to explain why you took Martin out of jail, Mr. Dillon.
Yeah, I know.
If he gets clean away, we're going to look pretty foolish.
He's not going to get away, Chester.
Yes, sir.
10-1, Martin will try to team up with his sidekick, Pulley, before he heads out of town. Let's try the saloons first and see if we can pick up his trail.
Yes, Mr. Dillon.
Martin said we'd never bring him in alive. So don't take any chances.
Mr. Dillon, not unless he's in the back room.
Let's walk over toward the bar. That's bad business, Chester. Martin's already shot one man in the back. We'll never catch him in the open if he's got anything to say about it.
Yes, sir, I've been thinking about that. Kind of makes a man's spine crawl.
Hiya, boy.
Heavenly day.
You act as though you were caught robbing a bank, Chester.
I've always suspected Chester of having a shady past, kid.
Have a drink, man?
No, we haven't got time. We can't stay. We're looking for a fellow.
By the way, who went bail for Boston Jack?
What do you mean?
Well, he was in here about 10 minutes
ago. He was in here, huh?
Yeah, he talked to Red Poley, and the two of them left together. I thought he must
have... You know where they went, Kitty?
Well, no, Matt, I haven't got any idea, but they sure left here in a hurry. He broke out of jail, huh?
There's 40 ways from Sunday they could have ridden, Mr. Dillon.
Yeah, I know. But if they're not in Dodge, there's only one way they'd hit.
The Circle B.
Yeah. Martin knows Hawks is the only witness I've got against him. Come on, Chester.
Ranch looks quiet.
Yeah. Well, we've been making time. Maybe we outrode them.
If they're even headed this way.
Well, they better be.
Hold it. Who's there?
Anyway.
Somebody standing there at the side of the house.
Yeah, I see. It's the marshal, Matt Dillon. Is that you, Ezra?
That's right. Come on up, Matt. What brings you way out here this time of night, Matt?
Well, I'm sort of counting on an old acquaintance of yours showing up here sometime tonight.
What are you talking about?
Boston Jack.
Out of jail. Matt, how'd that happen?
Well, I doubt it if it'd serve any good purpose to go into that right now. He hasn't been here, I take it.
No. Matt, he's a mad dog, ought to be shot long time ago. I'd kill him on sight.
Well, I came out here to make sure he doesn't kill you. Chester, put our horses in the barn. Get them out of sight, huh?
All right, Mr. Dillon.
And, you may as well stay there, Chester, and cover the yard.
Yes, sir.
Well, what about us, Matt? What are we going to do?
Go inside the house and put the lights out and wait. That's all, just wait.
It's been 30 minutes, Matt. I think you're on a cold trail.
And I hope not.
Yeah, you've had enough time to get here.
Maybe not enough courage, though.
They figure the odds are 2-1 in their favor. Shouldn't take much courage.
People who've never killed anybody don't understand. The killer's worst enemy is his own nerve.
Yeah. I'll take your word for it, Matt. I guess you've sat and waited like this plenty of times.
Yeah, too many.
Does it ever bother you, Matt? Do you ever get to wondering?
Wait a minute. Well, there they are, Ezra.
Where, Matt?
Over there by the corral. You see? They're walking the horses into the yard. Slow and quiet.
Yeah. Yeah, I see him. What are you going to do, Matt?
Go out and call him.
Oh, they'll fire from the dark without no warning.
Yeah, I know. They're getting off their horses. Gonna walk up here, I guess. All right, Ezra, stay in the house and keep out of this. Chester and I can handle him.
Yeah, Matt. Good luck.
Thanks.
Martin, Polly, you're under arrest.
Marshal!
Dillon!
Be careful, Matt.
Heads up, Chester. I dropped Polly. Martin's running into the corral.
Yes, sir, I see him, Mr. Dillon.
You're trapped, Martin. Now climb out of that corral.
I told you how it would be, Dillon. Come on in and get me.
Sure, Martin. I'm coming.
Mr. Dillon, he's buried the hayrick. We ought to... Look, he's trying to ride the horse out. Are you all right?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm all right.
Is he?
You didn't shoot him, eh?
No. He fell off right in front of the stampede. They went right over him.
Here we are, Mr. Dillon.
Yeah. Wait here for me, Chester. I'll go in and tell her.
All right, you.
I hope she believes me.
Don't worry, Mr. Dillon. She will.
I'll be out in a couple of minutes. Evening, Miss Blair.
Why, Mr. Dillon, this is a surprise.
Do you mind if I step in?
Of course I don't mind.
Thank you.
A friend of Martin's is welcome, and... Mr. Dillon, is something wrong?
I'm afraid so, Miss Blair. I've got bad news for you.
It's Martin. Something's happened to Martin.
Yes, ma'am.
He's hurt.
It's worse than hurt, ma'am.
No. Oh, no.
Martin was killed in a fight.
Martin dead.
If it's any consolation, Miss Blair, he died hard with all the odds against him.
Martin never asked for favor.
He fought a good fight. That's something to remember.
Martin has always been fine and clean. He was just restless. People didn't understand.
No, I suppose they didn't, Miss Blair. But he died on his feet, fighting.
I guess that's the way Martin wanted it.
Yes, I think so, ma'am. I suppose Ms. Markham's here. I wouldn't want to leave you alone.
Yes, she's here. I'll be all right, Mr. Dillon.
Well, I'll come by and see you in the morning. If there's anything at all I can do...
You've been very kind, Mr. Dillon. I'm grateful to you.
I'm sorry about this, Miss Blair.
Marshall, I'll be leaving tomorrow.
Yes.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, Miss Blair.
You all right, Mr. Dillon?
I think so, Chester.
Did she believe what you told her?
What I told her was true.
Well, there's no harm in letting her think the best of it.
Martin paid his debt. No reason his sister should suffer.
That's right, Mr. Dillon.
Chester, if I remember correctly, Kitty offered us a drink earlier this evening.
That's right.
Well, let's go.
Gunsmoke, under the direction of Norman MacDonald, stars William Conrad as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal. Tonight's story was specially written for Gunsmoke by Les Crutchfield, with music composed and conducted by Rex Corey. Featured in the cast were Gene Bates, Sam Edwards, and Ralph Moody. Parley Bear is Chester, and Georgia Ellis is Kitty. Gunsmoke is heard by our troops overseas through the worldwide facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. Join us again next week as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal, fights to bring law and order out of the wild violence of the West in Gunsmoke. Eve Arden plays the wisecracking English teacher Connie Brooks of Madison High Sunday nights on CBS Radio. And when our Miss Brooks calls the roll on comedy, there's laughter enough for all takers. Sunday nights on most of these same stations, join Eve Arden as our Miss Brooks for high-class classroom comedy. This is Roy Rowan speaking. America now listens to 105 million radio sets and listens most to the CBS Radio Network.
That is Gunsmoke from December 13th, 1952, with Post Martin starring William Conrad. Also in the cast, Gene Bates, Parley Bear, Ralph Moody, Sam Edwards, Roy Rowan doing the announcing, and that was heard on CBS. Hope you enjoyed Gunsmoke. In our hour two, it'll be a good detective adventure of Philo Vance starring Jackson Beck. And then the Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis Show, some comedy. Their special guest on that will be, you know who it is, Lisa? Very famous movie star.
Well, I'm holding the same notes you
Arlena
are.
Arlena Dietrich.
There you go.
Yeah, she was sort of a silent film star, and then she did, you know, she was like way, way back, 20s, 30s, 40s actress, and they have her on that particular episode. You're going to like it. Well, so far, only my song was chosen. They got that right. The theme from Shaft. They don't know your song yet, and Esmeralda's song, which are the same songs, and then Roger's song.
Yep, nobody has guessed any of those songs for anybody.
Wow. Well, the text in line, 312-981-7200. Let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. You know, I think I like this kind of contest where we're guessing the songs and this commercials for me, FM. You know why I like those? Because I'm a frustrated singer. Frustrated rock and roll singer.
See, and yeah. I had you pegged for someone who was just sort of living in the past.
I do that too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But,
good title for a song.
Yeah. I do that too.
Living in the past.
Oh,
no,
living in the past.
I do that too.
I do that too.
Yeah.
No, I you know, I am a frustrated singer. I can't sing a note.
Maybe
not
just
one
frustrated.
Note. I'm frustrated. Yes, I am frustrated at certain times. I just can't sing. And you know what? It sort of
frustrates
it
you.
Irritates me that I can't sing.
I think a lot of things irritate you.
Yeah. One of them is that I can't sing.
I think there's a host of things. It's really hard to keep track.
Really? You think so? Am I easily irritated, Lisa?
Not by me so much,
no,
but
you,
by a lot of other people.
You don't irritate me ever.
You know, well.
Just two times. We only had two arguments in the whole time we've known each
fault.
Other.
Well, they were your fault.
Yeah, they were. Of course they're my fault.
I mean, come on.
Oh,
my gosh.
What? Somebody got
did
it?
Did somebody win one? Guess one?
No,
so close, so close.
And well, it has nothing to do with the list that I put up over the last few days. Has nothing to do with it.
The list
that you put up.
What?
It has nothing to do with that. But if anybody follows me regularly on my Facebook page,
right,
they would know which artist I might be leaning towards.
You know what? I think somebody almost has it right. They just got a little mixed up on what, who, where
kind of thing.
So we'll see. So close.
Well, your song and Esmeralda's song, I almost, that's a good song. That's a really good
let's
one.
Let's just be real here. When I told you what song I picked.
But I forgot
what
how
did you
good
say to me? I don't even want to use the word.
I don't like that song. But then...
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All righty, it is hour two. Thanks for staying up late with us, everyone, out there across the country and into parts of Canada. And then everyone who listens to us all over the world, because we get texts all over the world from people listening online. They listen on the computer and then via podcast. Lisa has quite the fan base. She has people protecting her all the time. You know, don't talk. Don't say anything. Lisa doesn't have a wonderful voice. Somebody texted in. Someone said, your voice is monotone. And then someone else said, no, it's fantastic.
They're taking care of me.
I think it's mellifluous.
Yeah.
Four syllables.
Yeah. Well, somebody said they need a thesaurus to keep up with you.
They need a thesaurus.
No, I said it correctly. Thank you very much.
They need a thesaurus.
That's what I said. Yeah,
one named after me.
How many syllables three. On that one? Thesaurus. She's always right, Roger.
That's like fourth grade.
She has some kind of a very quick-witted syllable thing.
Just admit that she's smarter than you.
Oh, listen.
That's why I'm here,
there isn't
Roger.
One person listening on the radio that knows that's not true.
He's got the classic radio, but I've got some of the other things going. So well, it's a good team.
He's got the classic radio. And you're just classic.
And I'm just, yeah. Wow. I'm just a pretty face,
very
maybe.
Prophetic.
I don't know.
Lisa has two master's degrees. I'm not messing with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have none. She has two. I have none.
We complement each other well.
But I have a doctor's degree in classic radio.
Yes, you do.
Huh?
Yep.
Yeah. Yes,
right,
you do.
Right,
you mean a doctorate.
Ding, ding, ding.
Doctorate.
Ding, 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 ding. Doctorate. What did I say?
So
a doctor's degree.
A doctor's degree doesn't mean anything.
What did I say? A doctor's degree?
He's just like a letter off.
Oh, my.
He's allowed to carry a thermometer.
We talked about this yesterday. If I'm a couple letters off, it's like a mulligan. You got to give it to me.
I do.
If I'm off a couple, I'm so used to it at this point. Listen, I can be off a couple letters because I am off.
You're just a little off.
Just a little. But in a good way.
In a good way.
Oh, my gosh. Well, in this hour, we're going to tune into Philo Vance Detective. Did you say somebody got your song?
They sure did.
Somebody got Lisa's and Esmeralda's song, so let's play it right now. Man, this has a long opening.
It has a long intro. I'm so sorry.
Jeez.
Love it.
Isn't it good?
At the end of the week, I cranked this up to 14 in my classroom.
14, Roger.
Yes.
That sounds pretty bold of you.
I thought 11 was the most.
Nah, I had a 14 on mine.
This is a great tune.
The Who. I think we need a DJ show, Lisa. I think we need to play.
After we do Listen to Lisa, we'll work on the DJ show.
We got a third show we could do.
This is good stuff.
Play music from the 1970s.
Yeah.
I can't wait till we get into like 1975, 76, when I can put on my disco shoes, my platform shoes.
You should wear them to
and
the
my
studio.
My silk shirt and my satin pants.
I don't need
to
see that.
With the bell bottoms. You would not want to see that.
I just said
trust
that.
Me. And at the time, I don't know what was wrong with my hair. I literally had an afro as a kid.
I'm sure you looked just great.
I had an afro. I can show you. We posted pictures of me and my afro back in 1970 something.
That was in. I mean, I didn't have that kind of hair. With the girls
I didn't do anything to my hair. Maybe I just was like that.
The girls all had Farrah Fawcett hair. You know,
right.
We curl it back so we had
I had Farrah Fawcett's poster.
Oh, he was like the character in Peanuts, naturally curly.
Right.
I didn't put anything like any gel or anything in it. It just was like very
no Brill cream.
No Brill cream.
It just was au naturel.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't know. And I had a lot of it.
I bet. A lot of what?
Hair. I had a lot of it.
Okay. Yeah. That's good.
All right.
Okay.
So
okay.
Everyone's been guessed now? Or?
No, you have not,
mine
Roger.
Hasn't.
Nobody right. knows your song.
I will give
you're
a clue.
Mystery.
Roger, somebody has guessed your song for other people, but nobody has your song correctly.
Oh, for me.
No, okay. So we're gonna sit tight.
And actually, The Who, that song, was in my top five.
Okay.
Oh.
All right. Well, in this hour, it's Gunsmoke, and it's brought to you by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor stars in the TV show Ozark about a financial planner who must pay off a debt to a Mexican drug lord.
Hmm.
And the winner gets a $25 gift certificate for Lou Malnati's, my favorite deep dish pizza.
312-981-7200 is the number to call. Here's a hint. This actor played Nick in Horrible Bosses 1 and 2.
Call it what you want. I need $500,000. I don't need ideas and a bunch of hot air. Come on.
Man, that guy's great. Love this actor.
He's in a lot of great stuff.
312-981-7200. Give us a call. Win a pizza. We'll be right back.
This is the WGN Radio Theater. We are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it again.
Call it what you want. I need $500,000. I don't need ideas and a bunch of hot air. Come on.
Hey, David.
Yes.
Hi, how are you?
Very good.
Good. Who is that actor?
Jason Bateman.
Jason Bateman is exactly right. Congratulations. You are a winner, David. You have won a Lou Malnati's gift certificate for $25. That is a great prize. It's Home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza and my very favorite. You can find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at loumalnatis.com. Thanks so much for calling in and for winning.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thanks, David. Okay, it is time for Philo Vance Detective. We do have a winner for Roger's song, but we can't play it right now because we got to get into Philo Vance, but we'll do it right after the news at the bottom of the hour. This was a detective series created by S.S. Van Dyne, and Philo Vance was very popular in books, movies, and on radio. He was a stylish, highly intelligent, cultured PI, sort of like Lisa Wolf, you're a female version of Philo Vance. And there was movies on Philo Vance, and I don't think there was ever a television show, but there was a very popular radio show, and Jackson Beck starred in the radio version. This is called The Alibi Murder Case from June 6, 1950, part one now of Philo Vance Detective.
Hello, Markham.
Vance. Glad you could make it here at my office. And very glad you got here just now.
What's the big mystery, Markham? Why did you want me here at exactly 11 o'clock at night?
I'm not sure this whole thing isn't a gag of some kind, Vance, but if it isn't, I can promise you some excitement.
Well, district attorneys are famous for keeping their promises. I'm glad I came.
I hope you will be.
What's up?
Vance, I found a message on my desk this evening indicating I could expect a phone call at 11 o'clock tonight that might save somebody's life.
Hmm.
That's what we're waiting for.
Well, that's fine with me. I don't know anything I'd rather do. It's 1 minute after 11, though. Perhaps somebody else did a little life-saving.
Well, perhaps. We'll wait a few... Hold everything, Vance.
Yes, of course.
District Attorney Markham speaking.
Markham, this is John Green, Whitmere Apartments. You got my message.
About saving your life? Why, yes. Just what is all this, Green?
It's terrible.
What's the trouble, man?
I can't talk to you right now. Goodbye.
Vance, did you hear that?
I certainly did.
Hand me that phone book next to you.
Yeah, sure.
Thanks. He said his name was Green, John Green, Windmere Apartments. Green. Yes, here we are.
Tell Green if he's in trouble, we can be over there in 10 minutes.
All right, Vance.
Hello.
Green, this is Markham again. Now listen, Philo Vance and I are on the way over there. We'll be at your house in 10 minutes.
No, don't come if you try to...
Green. He doesn't answer, Vance.
Let's get over to his place right away. Apparently somebody shot him while he was talking to you. Markham, you've just eavesdropped on a murder.
Did the police question you, Lucy?
Most of the night and all the morning, Eddie. They say my husband was killed at 11 o'clock or a couple of minutes after. And they insisted on knowing where I was.
Yes, we figured they would. You told them?
Oh, I'm afraid you two were talking much too loudly. After all, this is a public library, and some people come here to read, you know.
Sorry.
Don't be sorry. Just lower your voices, if you please.
Lucy, the only thing you have to worry about is losing your head. And you have a perfect alibi for 11 o'clock. So have I.
Indeed, we do.
We were both seen by different people in different places at 11. And the police are certain your husband was shot at that time.
I know, Eddie. Oh, you were very clever. But, well, how did you do it?
We won't go into it now. All you have to do is sit tight and nobody will come near, either you or me. I killed John, but nobody will ever be able to prove it.
Well, you don't have to worry about me. I love you too much, and you're too close to me right now for me to do anything that would hurt us.
I remember what I said.
Yeah.
All you have to do is take it easy. Right now, I'm going over to play gin with young Bill Stedman. You go home and make like...
I'm very sorry, but you two will either have to stop talking so loud or leave. This is a library, and people do come
here... I'm here to read, I know. It's all right. We're just leaving.
Well...
We've done everything we wanted to do. I do mean everything. You keep shuffling the cards, Bill, and you'll rub the spots off them.
What's your hurry, Eddie?
The sooner you deal them out, the sooner we get the game going.
Oh, the sooner you win more of my money, huh?
Look, any time you want to quit, kid, it's okay with me.
I'm hooked almost $500. I'll keep playing. Oh, I was just figuring how much you've won from me in the past month.
How much?
Over $7,000.
You can afford it.
Yeah?
And if you can't, you shouldn't have played. Nobody hit you on the head and made you play gin with me.
I wish somebody had hit me on the head before I started. You want that card?
It's a diamond. There's no use for it.
Take another one. Eddie, how about doubling the stakes?
Nothing doing. You get out the way you got in.
Anything to give me a break, huh?
Anything.
Maybe you aren't so smart, friend.
Hmm?
Maybe I know a way to get some of my money back.
What's with that kind of talk?
Well, suppose the police knew that you and the wife of the guy who was shot last night, that John Green, were pretty friendly.
Don't be a baby. So I know Lucy. I knew the guy, too, didn't I? I rented my apartment from them a year ago. Let's keep this game going. I knock with three.
That's good. Three queens, three sevens, three jacks. That's three. I have no layoffs. Well, I got 8, 18, 24. Wait a minute.
What's the matter?
Those other cards you have palmed in your hand. You've been cheating me.
Don't be a dope. I have no cards
you
in my hand.
You just dropped them on the floor. I saw you, and I'm going to find it.
You're out of your head. Don't stop choking. Stop it or out.
And if you want to play that way, okay. Oh.
Little boys with too much money shouldn't get suspicious if they get hurt. Get up, Bill, and pay me off.
I'll get up, all right, and you'll get paid off, too. One way or another. Look, Vance, are you a private investigator or aren't you?
Take it easy, Mr. Stedman. As far as I know, I am a private investigator.
Good, then do something. I came up to tell you that the police are looking for the man who killed John Green, and I know who it is.
So you said, or should I say, shouted.
Well, all I can say now is that you're a whole lot overrated, Vance. You're supposed to be the guy who can spot a murderer with his eyes closed.
Most murderers don't walk around with their eyes closed.
You know what I mean. Yet, here I am, coming to you with a perfect case, motive and all, and you're not taking me seriously.
Of course I am. Now look, Bill, I know your mother, I know you. She's spoiled you a little. You had too much money and too little supervision. But don't think you can come up here and order me around.
Okay, Vance. Just answer one thing. I told you Edward Lee had a crush on John Green's wife. I told you Lee carried a gun and has a bad reputation. Why don't you investigate him?
For a very simple reason. The medical examiner placed the time of Green's death between 10:30 and 11:30. As a matter of fact, District Attorney Markham was talking on the phone to Green at a minute or so after 11 when he heard the shots that killed him. And Edward Lee was with neighbors on his floor, completely legitimate neighbors who say he was with them at 1 minute after 11. Now, are you satisfied?
No.
Well, the police are. Lee has an absolute alibi.
Oh, he has he?
Yes.
Well, all I can tell you is, if you think he has, then you're not as smart as people think you are, and Eddie Lee is a whole lot smarter.
Hey,
Okay, okay. Wait a minute. Yes?
Hello, I'm Philo Vance.
You are. And you've come to see me? How nice.
You're Edward Lee?
That's right. You're the guy who just pushed his way in here.
That's right.
Run over there and sit down. I'll be through working out in a minute or so.
Oh, go right ahead. You won't disturb me. I just have some facts to find out.
Like what?
Pretty good left hand you have there, Lee. For a right-handed person, that is.
How do you know I'm right-handed?
Your belt buckle. It's on the right side. Most people wear their buckles in the center. When they don't, a left-handed person has the buckle near his left hand.
And a right-handed person near his right hand. So I'm right-handed. That's what you came up to find out?
Hardly. I want to know how well you knew John Green.
That again. I didn't know him well at all. I rented this apartment from him about a year ago. He took another place upstairs in the building.
You did know his wife?
Sure. She was here when I rented the joint. What's it to you, Vance? What makes all you characters so curious?
All of us characters?
Sure, characters, busybodies. Guys that can't mind their own business. Guys like you. Somebody killed John Green, okay? He's dead. How do you figure to help him?
I figure to stop somebody else sometime from murdering a person because they'll remember that Green's killer was caught.
So far as I can see, Green's killer is going free. You've got nothing on anybody, including and especially me. So how about getting out of here before I go to work on you instead of that bag?
I'd rather enjoy any effort you made to throw me out of here.
Oh, you'd enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, never let it be said that I'm a bad host. Never let it be said that I didn't see to it you had a good time.
You haven't worked on that punching bag
long enough to take care of you.
Well, that, as the saying goes, is that. Perhaps the tip I got from young Bill Stedman about you, Lee, wasn't correct. But
what tip was that?
That you killed Green. Anyhow, I did have a good time this afternoon, so thank you very much for the entertainment. And Lee.
Yeah?
You must come over and see me sometime.
Come up and see me sometime. Who said that, Lisa? Very famous line. Come up and see me sometime. It's a girl trying to do the voice.
I was going
to
say,
Roger would know it.
Of course he knows it.
That was Mae West. She said it in a lot of movies. That was her famous line. Come up and see me sometime. Anyway, that's what he just said.
I can hear that.
Do I look like Mae West when I say it, sort of?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have a similarity.
Similar. that is the first portion of Philo Vance. I'm excited because we did get Roger's song. We'll identify it after the news, but first these words. All right, when we come back from the news, we will reveal Roger's favorite song, and then we'll get back to Philo Vance. Then in hour three, it's the Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis show. So quite a bit more classic radio coming your way. We'll be here till 2 o'clock in the morning. Lisa was sleeping on that last one there. She was out.
You know, I'm so glad we have cameras around here, so we know. And
she
Carl's
was
telling a little
nodding off.
Fibber.
She said she, but you said you only slept 4 hours, so that's okay.
That's
you
true.
Could take a little cat nap here.
No,
and there.
No, I'm wide awake.
I mean,
here.
Cat's Pride's are one of our main sponsors, so if you want to take a Cat's Pride cat nap,
all right. Well, I'll wake you up when it's time.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, Lisa. Well, guess what? Everybody's song has been identified now.
Yes. I think maybe it was that clue that somebody had guessed a song, but not for the right person, and everybody just started scrambling.
Well, this tells you how much I know. I didn't think anybody would get my song, and my song was the first one they got.
That's true.
And I thought everybody would know Roger's song right away, and it was the last one. So I'm completely wrong. I'm 100% wrong.
I
could not be more wrong.
I can't argue with you.
Maybe I should. Everything I do, I should just do it the opposite, right? Like let's say tomorrow something happens. I should just maybe do the opposite.
I don't get it.
Right?
Like what?
That's probably a good thing.
What do you mean?
But then it'll be worse. It'll just be worse.
I don't get it.
All right, so Roger's song has been identified, and here it is.
has a long intro, too. Roger, this has a long intro. Go ahead, Roger, sing.
Kind of hard doing it without headsets over there, can't you? But yeah, so if anyone knows anything about me, they know from following me on Facebook, or whatever, they know that like George Harrison is like one of my big heroes.
Yeah.
Well, clearly people did know you because it took about halfway through the show to get there, but we did it.
Yeah, it's.
I mean, this song. As I'm hearing it now, I'm like, okay, yeah, this is a good song.
Yeah.
See, he's very critical. My song, no good. Your song, no good. Just his.
Was on my.
Was it?
Well, it was. It made my second to last cut.
Roger's down here in the studio.
Roger whittles away a little
each day. Did you bring any sand?
Any what?
Any sand.
Sand.
Yeah,
for our sandbox.
I'm keeping.
Did you bring your did you bring your shoe shine box? What was that?
My shovel.
No. What was that? In Goodfellas. Go get your shoe shine box.
My shoe shine box.
So did you bring some sand and a shovel and a pail?
And a pail.
And a.
No.
No.
I didn't.
Well, this
no.
is a good song,
I left it
Roger.
At home. I don't want anyone playing with my
it's
sand.
It's a good song. So you know what? Our listeners, the smartest listeners in all of radio, they did identify all three of our songs for the four of us. And we'll try this maybe next week with 1972.
Yeah, and thank you. Okay. Yeah, and thank you everyone who texted in and who gave guesses and who played along with us because we had a lot of fun and we hope that you did too.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you learn a little bit more about each other that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, good job. All right, think about 1972. Don't whittle it down.
I had trouble getting to 1972.
You know what you should do, Roger? When you've got it down to like five, just write them down on your Facebook.
No, because then that'll give it away. 72, that was middle of college for me.
Really?
I don't remember
I wasn't
much
born
of
yet.
College. You weren't born
no,
yet?
No, I wasn't born yet. Lisa was born in 1927? What was it?
28.
28,
you're
okay.
You're so close.
And I was not born yet.
One number again.
All right, we got to get back to this. Let's. Here's the conclusion now of Philo Vance, Detective.
Eddie.
Keep your voice down, Lucy. I don't want that librarian to come over here and warn us again. I do want to talk to you.
I'll be careful. Well, what's been happening?
Shh. Bill Stedman got sore because I beat him in a couple of card games, and he went to Philo Vance and told Vance I killed your husband.
Oh, he didn't.
No, he did all right.
Oh.
Vance was over at my place to find out a little more about me.
Oh, well, what do you care, Eddie? You got an alibi that nobody will be able to crack. You were with your next-door neighbor at a minute after 11.
Yeah, sure, but you know I gimmicked everything.
Shh, please. I know you did, but I don't know how you did it. Oh, Eddie, you're wonderful.
Cut it out, the librarian.
Oh, I don't care about her. I only care about us, about you and me now that John's out of the way.
Quit that, will you? Cut it out.
Oh, if you two invented it, don't you realize how loud talking distracts the others here in this library?
Okay, we'll be quiet.
You'd better. You're disturbing the others.
Well, it isn't only the others he's disturbing. He's also disturbing me.
Shh, please.
Here you are, Markham. Here's your skeleton key back.
Right, Vance. Eric, get the light switch, will you?
Right. Here we are.
This is pretty risky business, Vance, breaking into an apartment.
Breaking in, Markham?
Yes.
We didn't break in. We used a key, just as Mrs. Green would use a key if she came home right this minute. Besides, who could arrest the district attorney?
Vance, it's remarkable how your logic can sound so good, even though both of us know you're ad-libbing. Now that we're here, tell me what we're doing.
All right. You've heard of hunches.
Yes. Yes, they're the thing a fictional detective always follows when he can't find a clue. Do you have one?
No, not at all. This is the spot where I should have one, though, if that logic of mine, which you seem to like, wasn't functioning.
Which means?
That there's a tie-up between Green's widow and Edward Lee. Lee is very smug and very sure of himself.
Mm-hmm.
His apartment is six floors down, but a visit here might result in our finding something that will connect him with the crime.
Well, this is the room where Green's body was found, at the telephone. A gun inches away from his hand, but not the gun that killed him.
In other words, when you called him back from your office, he answered the phone while holding a gun on somebody in the room.
Vance, is it possible that my call distracted him so that the murderer had a chance to shoot? I'd hate to think that.
I don't believe that's what happened. Now, Markham, look through this desk, will you? I'm going into Mrs. Green's room to see what I can find.
All right. If you see anything that's even remotely interesting, make...
Oh! Markham, what happened? Markham! Markham! Markham, are you hurt badly? Where's that phone? Come on.
Operator?
Come on. Operator, rush an ambulance to the Windmere Apartments. The district attorney's been shot, and I'm afraid he's badly hurt. This is Philo Vance. District Attorney Markham was shot about an hour ago. As he and I were looking through the apartment of John Green, who had been murdered the day before. Both of our suspects, Mrs. Green and a man named Edward Lee, have alibis for around 11 o'clock, the time we believe the murder was committed. Markham has been taken to the hospital, and I am about to go into his room now to see how serious...
Vance?
The nurse said I could stay only a few moments. How do you feel?
Not bad. The bullet just grazed my side, I've been told. I guess somebody didn't want us at the Green apartment, Vance.
Oh, I don't know. Nobody fired at me.
Well, then somebody didn't want me there, let's say. Somehow I'd have preferred being told I wasn't wanted.
Can't blame you for that. I'll tell you something, Markham. I got on the telephone and called Edward Lee after I'd done what I could for you while I was waiting for the ambulance.
Did you reach him?
No.
And then Lee may have shot me.
Yes. It could have been Mrs. Green, of course, or it might have been somebody else. Someone I've overlooked.
Who's that?
Bill Stedman. That wealthy young man who came to my office insisting that Edward Lee killed John Green.
Oh.
Perhaps we've been on the wrong track.
Right at the moment, I don't particularly care, Vance. All I care about is getting out of this hospital so we can work together on this case.
You just stay here and rest.
I'll stay here, of course, until the doctors say I can go, but I don't know how I can rest with a murder unsolved.
In that case, Markham, and in view of the fact that we started this investigation together and it must be continued, let's say that you remain here and leave the rest to me.
Sit down.
Well, I really want to talk to you. Mother, I've got to go. I've got an appointment.
What kind of an appointment? To gamble again?
Who, me?
Don't lie to me, William. I've known about your gambling for some time. Any day now, I expect to pick up a paper and read William Stedman, Jr., wealthy young playboy, arrested in gambling raid. I won't have that, William.
I don't go to gambling houses.
I know you haven't been going to them, but I know you've been gambling, and I know you've been losing. The bank called up and said you were overdrawn. They read me the amounts of the checks you've been giving somebody named Edward Lee, and before that, to someone named John Green.
Well, I had a little bad luck, Mom.
Little? You had a lot of bad luck. And you're going to stop gambling right this minute.
But I don't always lose. Look. Here, look. Take a look. See? All this money?
What?
I haven't deposited it, but I won it.
From whom?
From John Green, just before he was murdered.
The John Green who was murdered? Is that the man you were playing with?
Why not? But I won this money from him while he was still alive.
Did you, William? Did you win it from him while he was alive, or did you take it from him after you killed him?
Thank you for coming down here to Markham's office with me, Mrs. Green.
Well, that's all right.
I believe you'll want to be with me when I find out something, if I find it out.
Well, what are you looking for?
Some indication of who killed your husband, of course.
Oh. Well, Vance... I have a confession to make.
I know.
You know?
I think so. You shot Mr. Markham, didn't you?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, but how did you know it was?
Rather simple. You realize Markham isn't seriously hurt, and I certainly didn't expect you to confess your husband's murder, so what else could it be?
I didn't mean to shoot Markham. I came home, saw somebody bending over the desk, and thought it was a burglar. I carried a gun, so I shot. Then when I heard you call Mr. Markham's name, I knew I'd made a mistake. So I ran out.
Well, thank you for telling me, Mrs. Green. I'm sure we'll be able to straighten out the situation. Now, would you mind coming in here to Markham's office with me?
Not at all.
Thank you. Ah, here we are. Now I want you, Mrs. Green, to be me.
You want what? I beg your pardon?
Sit here in this chair. Now, I'm going to pretend to be Markham, and also pretend this is the night your husband was killed. I'm at the desk when the phone rings.
Uh-huh.
Markham picks it up, and a voice says, "I'm John Green, Windmere Apartments. I'm in trouble," and so forth and so on, and hangs up. Markham told me what happened, then went through the phone book here looking for your number.
Well, I'll tell you the number. It's Clover 61561.
Oh, is it? Well, Markham then dialed the number.
Of course, you know there won't be any answer. There's no one at my house.
You'll see. I'm trying to do exactly what Markham did the night your husband was shot, remember?
Mm-hmm.
They're ringing, Mrs. Green.
Well, no one will answer.
I imagine that's so. Well...
Hello?
Hold the phone.
Well, there's somebody in my house? Well, who could it be?
I'll let you know in a moment. Hello, who is this?
Donnelly, 23rd Precinct. I'm on duty here. Who's this?
Oh, I'm sorry, Donnelly. This is Philo Vance. Please excuse this call.
Right.
It was a police officer.
Oh.
Mrs. Green.
Yep.
I've just had an idea, a very brilliant idea.
Well, if you say so yourself, and you said so yourself.
So I did.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to see if Mr. Markham is well enough to come over here and promise him as a reward that I know who killed your husband and how his killer could have a perfect alibi.
I'm a little weak, but I'll be all right, Donnelly.
Sure you will, sir.
Thank you for helping me here to my office.
It's no trouble at all, Mr. Markham.
There
we are. You're sitting down now, so you shouldn't feel too badly.
I feel fine. All I really needed was Philo Vance's request to come down here. What's this on my desk?
What is it?
Oh, it's a note from Vance. It says call John Green's house. Well, if Vance says so, I'll do it. Would you hand me that phone book, please?
Sure thing. There you are, D.A.
I called Green's number the night he was killed, but I don't remember it. Let me see. Here we are. Green. John Green, Windmere Apartments, that's it.
What's supposed to happen after you call the number?
I don't have the slightest idea, Donnelly, but I'll know in just a minute.
Hello, Vance speaking.
This is Markham Vance.
Well, how do you feel?
All right, but why did you want me to call?
Where am I?
Where are you? Well, look, Vance, I'm the one that was shot, remember? You're at John Green's place, of course. I just looked up your number in the phone book.
But I'm not Markham.
You're not?
No, I'm in Edward Lee's apartment, 6 floors below Green's. And I'm quite certain I can prove he killed Green. Lee's upstairs in the Green apartment now. I'm going up and have a showdown with him.
So you see, Lee, that's how you arranged the entire setup.
Is that
it's
right?
It's very apparent to me why you did it, of course. As an alibi for your whereabouts at the time we thought Green was killed.
You're pretty smart, Vance.
Oh, he told me in Markham's office he was brilliant.
He can hit and he can think. That's a tough combination to beat.
Thank you.
Okay, Vance, I'll tell you the truth. I did kill Green.
But Eddie...
Oh, what's the difference, kid? He knows I wouldn't have set up that alibi gimmick if I hadn't killed him. But, Vance, it was self-defense, and I have a witness to prove it, Mrs. Green.
Yes, that's right.
I'm listening.
Well, it was this way. I was up here in Green's apartment. The radio was on. I was dancing with Mrs. Green. Right, Lucy?
Oh, yes, it is.
You see, Vance?
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, I was dancing with Mrs. Green. Her husband came in, saw us, and yanked out a gun. I never even thought about what I was doing. In fact, the whole thing happened so fast, I never even took my hand from around Mrs. Green. Right, Lucy?
Right, Eddie.
I pulled my gun and shot before he could. That's my story, Vance.
It is, eh?
That's right. You found Green's gun next to his body, and it's a story that Lucy will back up. It was self-defense.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I admit I planted the alibi that you broke, that I rigged up that telephone stunt, but I did it because I was scared.
You can really start getting scared now, Lee.
What?
I can break your self-defense story in a minute.
Oh,
you're right-handed. If you were dancing and you still had your arm around Mrs. Green, how could you pull a gun? With your left hand?
Well,
that's what I thought. Another thing. That telephone idea of yours took a little time to plant. You had to do that the afternoon of the night you were going to kill Green. And if that's not premeditation, I don't know what is.
You're nuts.
You're coming with me, both of you.
But you can't.
And then I'm going to explain to Markham just how your telephone gimmick worked.
It's
Start from the beginning, Vance.
Well, the beginning was a year ago when Edward Lee rented the Greens' apartment in the Windmere building.
Mm-hmm.
When the Greens lived in the place, they had a telephone, and naturally, the telephone book listed their name and number.
Then they moved to another apartment in the same building. What happened to the number?
It was changed. The number they had, Edward Lee now has.
Uh-huh.
If you look up Lee's name in the new phone book, you'll find it has the same phone number as the Greens used to have.
I see what happened now. I looked up Green's number after the call came into my office and happened to look it up in the old phone book so that I was really calling the number that now is in Lee's apartment.
Exactly. Except that you didn't happen to look it up in an old book.
What do you mean?
Lee was here the afternoon of the murder and left an old book in place of the one in your office.
What?
That could be done without exciting any suspicion.
Yes, I imagine so. If my secretary's back were turned, or if it were done surreptitiously, I'll grant you no one would notice.
After that, it was easy for Lee. He killed Green at 10:30 in Green's apartment.
Yeah.
Then he went to his own apartment and called you, put on his act, and went next door to his neighbor's to establish his alibi.
The medical examiner did say Green was killed between 10:30 and 11:30. But having heard that shot on the telephone, the one that Lee apparently faked, I was certain the murder took place at a minute after 11 o'clock.
And so was I. Lee tried to get away with saying it was self-defense. But too much detail had to be established in advance of the killing for it to be anything but murder.
No question about that. All the things like my being alerted for something to happen at 11 o'clock, a phone call that was cut short abruptly so that I'd call back. Yes, it was all too well planned.
Well planned, Markham, but not too well planned, or it might have succeeded.
How do you mean?
That stunt of using the telephone to establish an alibi was unusual, but it could be figured, and I figured it.
You certainly did. Vance, you told me Mrs. Green was the one who fired at me. Did she mean to kill me?
I think she was honest about believing there was a burglar in her apartment, and that's why she fired. But she's an accessory to the crime of killing her husband, so you have her on that charge.
It seems to me that, thanks to you, Vance, she and Edward Lee have reached the end of their trail.
That's fair enough, my friend, inasmuch as we've reached an end, too. The end of the alibi murder case.
That is definitely an organ, Lisa. You see how I'm getting to a point where I can identify an organ from a piano, from a harp?
Yeah, it's impressive.
It's improvement.
Yes.
That's definitely an organ
there,
and it's the Mutual organ, because this show was on the Mutual Broadcasting System. That is the Alibi Murder Case, starring Jackson Beck from June 6, 1950. Hope you enjoyed that. Let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. All right, we're back. This is the WGN Radio Theater. Saturday and Sunday nights, Lisa has to put up with me.
It's a lot of Carl.
It's a lot of Carl. And it's every Saturday and Sunday from 11 till 2 in the morning, 3 hours. Lisa, if you have to sleep during the show, you should probably sleep in the green room because there's cameras in here and they see you sleep in.
Right.
And all that.
Yeah, it's really inappropriate. I really need to step it up.
Yeah, and the drool.
Yeah, it's just bad.
Anyway, so it's almost 1 o'clock in the morning, and in our hour three, we're going to tune into a good comedy with Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis and their special guest, Marlena Dietrich. Jerry Lewis and Dean Martin, gosh, huge careers, right?
Yeah.
They met. They were just two young guys. They met and started doing an improv act nightclub acts, and then it just skyrocketed. Skyrocketed. Didn't have the last on there.
You missed a couple.
They were together exactly 10 years. They signed a contract, a 10-year contract with Hal Wallace, and as soon as that contract was up, Lisa, the day it was up, they broke up.
Oh,
kind of a sad story.
Yeah.
Kind of a sad story. I told you my Jerry Lewis, when I first met Jerry Lewis.
Yeah,
Waldorf Astoria. I had licensed his shows, and I talked to him a lot on the phone. And then I said, hey, I'm coming to New York. He was doing Damn Yankees on Broadway, and he was staying at the Waldorf Astoria Hotel. So I said, hey, let's get together. Let's have lunch or something like that. He's like, great. You know, be here at like 11:45 and we'll have lunch. I said, okay, I'll be there. And I was like 15 minutes late. I got there at like noon and he was nowhere in the lobby. And so I went up to the girl and I said,
the girl,
whatever, the girl that was at the counter. And I said, Mr. Lewis, is he around? She's like, oh, are you Carl Amari? I said, yeah. He left. I'm like, oh, my gosh. I said, are you serious? She's like, oh, yeah, he left.
That's what I'm going to do next time you're late.
Yeah.
I'm going to
so
leave.
So don't be late.
I'm going to remember that.
Here's a little advice, Lisa. If you're ever meeting with Jerry Lewis,
don't be late.
Don't be late.
And here's the other thing. Mm-hmm. I think it's disrespectful to be late when you're meeting anybody.
Oh, yeah.
Even me.
Yeah. You know what? From that time on,
yeah,
I have been hours
very
early.
Punctual.
For
you usually are early.
I'm very early. I'm usually,
you are.
If I'm not
like
there, something happens.
Early.
I'm always early.
You are.
Yeah. And that taught me a lesson. Jerry Lewis taught me that lesson.
There
be
you go.
Early. For because it shows respect, you
I
know,
agree
if you're early,
you
know, because people's time is it's valuable, you know.
Okay, what I learned is early is on time, and on time is late. That's what I've learned.
That sounds like a Mr. Matenki.
No,
thing.
It's not from him. It's from
your dad,
an employer. Actually,
oh really? He said that
mm-hmm.
when you were working at Wendy's. Is that what it was?
No, it wasn't.
What
from
was
Wendy's.
What was the thing that you couldn't handle the smell? Was it McDonald's?
No, it was Wendy's.
Oh, it was Wendy's. I was right.
Yeah, it was Wendy's.
Lisa worked at Wendy's, and she worked what one day?
Yes.
And because you couldn't handle the smell of the
I don't
fryer,
know, the grease.
Like
I don't know. It just got to me, and
you started
I started feeling nauseous, and I.
She's
well,
like, I can't do this.
I did. I did that.
And, you know, Wendy's, no offense, Wendy's. We like Wendy's. They're open late. I mean,
yeah,
never know
I
when you might need a baked potato or something.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thank you, Bill Curtis. And thank you, Esmeralda and Roger. Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you, Carl.
For putting up with me.
Well, thank you
for the last two.
You know what?
What?
Thank you for taking me along with you on this crazy ride.
Oh, it is
here.
A crazy, crazy, crazy. We've been doing a radio show together, Lisa and I, since
2009.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we have another show that we do, a syndicated program. And now we've been here on WGN almost, well, two and a half years.
Yeah,
right. In April, it'll be 3 years. So 2.5 years.
Almost.
And we're having, this is the most fun I think I have all week long.
Oh,
is coming here and doing this show with you. You crack me up. I love listening to the podcast after because I have some weird thing. I have like tunnel hearing. I don't really hear when I'm talking. I can't hear other people talking when I'm talking.
That's because you're always talking, so you can't really listen.
Did you just say something?
No.
And so I listen to the podcast and hear Lisa, and you crack me up. I crack up listening to you.
We just know much about each other's like flaws and weaknesses that we can poke fun.
And one of these days, I'm going to get this show off the air, the Listen to Lisa radio show.
That's right. Let's do
it. You have to do that because you would be great at that.
You need to talk to your friend Elliot.
Because Lisa is sort of like my therapist, right? That's
yes.
That's a big job.
It
and I've never gotten
is.
A bill from you.
Well,
thankfully,
you know what? Things are changing.
you've raised your rates.
From nothing to nothing.
And Lisa's like my therapist. So I'll call her. I'll be like, oh, Lisa, this is how this happened. Or, oh, I got to do this or do that. And she's always gives me good advice. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Carl.
Thanks, Lisa. I appreciate it. You always give me great advice.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I don't always listen to it, but you do give me great advice.
That's true.
In this hour, it's the Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis Show. Special guest, Marlena Dietrich from 1952, and it's brought to you by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor stars in the TV show Rain about an assassin who specializes in making his hits look like they've died from natural causes.
Oh, I like that.
I knew you'd like that, right?
It's a TV show or a movie?
An upcoming I said, what did I say?
I don't listen.
I know. An upcoming TV show called Rain.
So he's going to do a television series?
Yep.
Very cool.
Yep.
I'll watch it.
Right.
All right. The number to call, 312-981-7200. What do they win? Twilight Zone?
A Twilight Zone 4-CD set, just like we have given away this evening for our music competition.
All right. You can win some Twilight Zone CDs. Give us a call, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This actor stars in the John Wick film series.
I need one for day and one for night.
All right. Who is that? I need one for day and one for night.
And what might you be referring to?
He was talking about a suit. He needs a suit for daytime and needs a suit for nighttime.
Gotcha.
All right, who's that actor? Give us a call. We'll be right back.
All right, we're back. This is the WGN Radio Theater. We are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it again.
I need one for day and one for night.
Hey, Jose, how are you?
Hello, Lisa Wolf. Hello, Mr. Carl.
Hi, Jose.
It's good to hear from you.
It's good to hear you guys. You guys made my weekend.
Oh, well, you make our weekend. We love to hear from you.
Yes, we do.
Who is that? Who is that great actor that needs one for day and one for night?
Yes, ma'am. One of my favorite actors, Keanu Reeves.
Keanu Reeves is exactly right. Do you know what you won?
Twilight Zone, maybe?
There you go. It's a Twilight Zone 4-CD set, and it's produced by Carl, so it's got to be good, right?
Yeah, they're very good and very entertaining.
Yes, they certainly are. So congratulations, and thank you so much for calling in. It's great to hear from you.
All right. God bless both of you, and get home safe, and have a good night.
Thanks, Jose. Appreciate it. God bless you, too.
Okay.
All right. Well, he's a big winner. He's getting some Twilight Zone CDs, and we'll give away some more Twilight Zone CD sets next week. We'll do 1972 is our song.
On Sunday.
We're going to look at the list and pick something out. All right. Are you ready for Martin and Lewis, Lisa?
Yes, sir.
Comedy series. They were on radio. Then they did television. They were in the movies. Very famous duo. And as I say, in 1956, they broke up 10 years to the day of their first teaming. It's really weird. On the day, which was July 25th, 1946, they first hooked up. And on July 25th, 1956, they broke up.
It sounds like a divorce.
Almost, yeah. But, you know, after the split, both men's careers reached new highs. I mean, they really took off with, you know, their individual careers. Well, we're going to listen to a 1952 episode from March 21st. This has special guest Marlena Dietrich. Let's tune it in. Part one of the Martin and Lewis Show.
Transcribed.
Ladies and gentlemen, from Hollywood, we present the Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis Show. And now it gives me great pleasure to introduce our master of ceremonies, Dean Martin.
Well, hi, folks. Well, it's Friday again. We've just returned from a month of personal appearances. Yes, sir, we made a lot of friends in such wonderful cities as San Francisco, Minneapolis, Cincinnati, Boston, and New York. So let's start the festivities with a song, When You're Smiling.
When you're smiling, when you are smiling, while the whole world smiles with you, when you're laughing, oh, when you're laughing, the sun comes shining through, but when you're crying, you bring on the rain, so stop your sighing, be happy again, keep on smiling, 'cause when you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you. and smiling. 'Cause when you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, when now... I'm smiling, when I'm smiling.
Well, if it isn't my partner, Jerry Lewis.
If it isn't, I sure have been using the wrong toothbrush.
Tell me, Jerry, after a month on the road, how does it feel to be back in Hollywood?
I'm glad you asked me that, Dean. I'm going to tell you, too. When I got off that train in Los Angeles, I was really feeling good. I hopped off in the best of spirits, tipped the porter with a big smile, walked through the depot happy as a lark, strode through the big main entrance, took one look outside and said,
Jay, don't tell me you're going to stand there and say we had rain in California.
What? Me say that it rained in California? Don't be silly. It never rains in California.
That's better.
Sure, my kid always goes to school with a flock of salmon.
Flock of salmon? Jerry, now this conversation is really getting insipid.
Oh, I don't know. It sounds sipid enough to me.
Look, Jerry, will you take a word of advice from someone who loves you?
Sure. What is it, Ma?
Jerry, I'm not your mother. Your mother's a woman.
Good heavens. So that's why Dad married her.
All right. Very funny, Jerry. Really, you fracture me.
No, you fracture me. I just joined the Blue Shield.
Ah, what's the use? I can't take much more of this. One of these days, I'll have to leave you and take a holiday.
All righty. Which holiday would you like? Christmas, New Year's, or Judy?
Jerry. Judy is not the kind of a holiday I want.
You don't feel good with me.
Oh, forget it, Jerry. You won your point.
Let's face it, buddy. I always win my point.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, ad-libbed. I don't know where I am.
Well, I know where I am. I'm just about to introduce our first guest.
And what grand surprise have you in store for us tonight? Pray tell me, won't you?
Well, tonight we are being blessed with a visit from Dr. Ludwig von Krivis, the noted tree surgeon. He's the most famous tree doctor in the world.
Dean, I hate so to disappoint you, but Dr. von Krivis won't be here. He broke his leg.
Oh, that's too bad. How'd it happen?
He fell out of a patient.
Well, now what do we do?
Simple. Just introduce me as the doctor, and your tree troubles are all over.
All righty. Ladies and gentlemen, it is my pleasure and privilege to introduce the world's leading authority on tree health, the world-renowned tree surgeon, Dr. Ludwig von Krivis. Good evening, Dr. von Krivis. As a tree surgeon, I know you must have some unusual experiences. Tell us, have you ever been in danger?
Once I was up... I was up in a tree with my saw, and a big bee stung me on the hand.
Did you put anything on it?
No, it flew away too fast.
But while you were up there, did you saw anything?
What could I saw? On the second floor, they had the shade pulled down.
Doctor, will you tell us about the famous operation you performed on the... That giant elm tree?
Secondly. First, undercut.
Hoist. Please, hoist.
In the beginning, I made an undercut on top of the tree. Then I made a top cut at the bottom of the tree. This allowed the sap to circulate freely. Then I stripped off all the bark, exposed the cambium, and made a quick incision with my scalpel, and then chopped Turn Thornton's blight. My job was done.
Well, good heavens, what was wrong?
Nothing. I was barking up the wrong tree.
Yeah. Tell me, Doctor, have you ever done any grafting?
Well, once I ran for mayor in Scranton.
No, Doctor. I mean, have you ever conducted any big experiments?
Oh, surely. I was the first to cross a California redwood with a New Hampshire maple.
And what did you get?
Splinters.
Maybe you can help me, Doctor. The pine tree in front of my house is full of little yellow blisters.
Oh, that's nothing. Yesterday I saw a tree and it was complaining because its peaches were too soft.
Oh, that can't be serious. The peaches were probably overripe.
Ah, but the problem wasn't that simple.
Why not?
This was an apple tree.
Apple tree. You know, our time is running short, Doctor. Before you go, would you care to make any statement as to the general health of trees in this country?
Certainly. I would say that most of our trees is pretty sick kids, and the situation is getting worse.
I suppose you could say that the trees are going to the dogs?
No, but you could say the dogs are going to the trees.
Well, the most popular songs express pretty definite sentiments, ladies and gentlemen. They usually say, I love you or I hate you. They all seem to get right to the point. Well, the number I'm going to sing right now falls out of the regular category and heads right into the middle of the road. Richard, a little maybe music.
Maybe you think of me when you are all alone. Maybe the one who is waiting for you will prove untrue. Then what will you do? Ah, maybe you sit inside wishing that I were near. Then maybe you'll ask me to come back home again, and maybe I'll say maybe. Maybe you'll ask me to come back home again, maybe I'll say maybe.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Well, if you'll excuse me for a minute, I'll go out and fetch our most fetching guest, who will be with us right after Jimmy Wallington has this to say.
Thank you, Dean. Ladies and gentlemen, here is something you should know if you ever suffer from the sudden pain of headaches, neuritis, or neuralgia. It's a way to ease the pain, often within a few minutes. A way that is incredibly fast and effective. It's Anacin. Anacin is like a doctor's prescription. That is, Anacin contains not just one, but a combination of medically proven active ingredients in easy-to-take tablet form. Thousands of people were first introduced to Anacin through their own physicians or dentists. But today, these tablets are in such widespread use that all drug counters have them, and anyone may enjoy their benefits. The next time you suffer from the pains of a headache, neuritis, or neuralgia, by all means, try Anacin. You'll like the convenience of Anacin tablets, and you'll be delighted with Anacin's incredibly fast action. A-N-A-C-I-N. Anacin. Ask for Anacin by name today at your druggist's.
All right, I know what a headache is.
Okay, you've had one of those.
I've had a headache, you know, but neuritis and neuralgia.
No, I think it was uritis.
I think it's right? Neuritis.
I think uritis.
I think it's, he said...
It was neuralgia because we know what neuralgia is.
Do I really know what neuralgia is?
Yeah,
I'm not sure if I do.
We talked about that.
But what's uritis? Neuritis.
I don't know. neuralgia
anyway.
Is like the it's like nerve pain.
Yeah, you got nerves.
Neuralgia. You've got nerve, all right.
You got a lot of nerve.
But uritis.
Yeah, what's neuritis?
I
think there's an N in front of it. Neuritis. Of course, you're always right and I'm always wrong, so you're probably right.
Yeah, it's.
Am I wrong again?
I don't know. I can't find it because I don't
know. Whatever. We'll figure it out.
Oh, neuritis.
Yeah, there is an N.
Inflammation of a peripheral nerve or nerves.
Right.
Usually causing pain and loss of function.
Yeah.
I don't know what function we're specifically
referring to. Back to the nerving thing. You've got a lot of nerve to tell me what neuritis is. All right. So we're listening to the Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis Show. We'll get back to it in just a few moments.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, welcome back to the WGN Radio Theater. We are here every Saturday and Sunday night from 11 p.m. till 2 o'clock in the morning. Lisa, wake up. Still have another half an hour almost.
Almost.
You wake up over there.
I'll keep you up.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I don't think so.
Oh, I do.
You need to get that uvula clipped.
You love
that's
to
say, why you
you just
snore.
Like to say that word.
If you get the uvula clipped, you won't snore. Dan must go crazy with that. Does he wear earplugs, or what does he do when you guys are sleeping and you're snoring away?
We don't sleep.
You're too busy, right? All right, let's get back now to the Martin and Lewis Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, our guest tonight is one of the real great treats in our current series. She is easily one of the most beautiful, glamorous, and famous actresses of our time. And it's really a thrill to welcome her here now. So here she is, your favorite and ours, the one and only Marlena Dietrich, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you, everybody. Hello, Dean. And thank you, Dean, for the very flattering introduction.
It's my pleasure, Marlena. And now I suppose you must be anxious to meet my partner, Jerry?
Not necessarily, Dean. I saw him in the hallway before the show. He was chasing a girl.
Well, that's nothing. Lots of fellows chase girls.
With a slingshot?
No. But hark! Here comes young Romeo now.
Hey, Dean, after your next song, can I...
Good heavens, you went and had your legs remodeled.
Jerry, you're looking at the most beautiful legs in the world. And they don't belong to me.
Don't be sad, Booby. You still have a pretty face.
Well, Marlena, this is Jerry. Are there any questions?
Yes. At what age did they cut off his tail?
Sounds like Humphrey Bogart with a sore throat.
Jerry, this happens to be Marlena Dietrich. You've seen her in pictures. She usually plays a siren.
Siren? Sounds more like a foghorn.
Look who's talking. He sounds like Andy Devine having a nightmare.
Now, you see, Jerry, you've made her angry. Now, I want you to behave like a real gentleman. After all, this is Marlena Dietrich.
She's Marlena... Well, if she's Marlena Dietrich, I'm Johnny Ray.
You better show him, Marlena.
See what the boys in the
back. Well, what do you say, Jerry?
If you're sweeter...
Well, you mustn't mind Jerry, Marlene. His mind wandered.
Well, don't worry about it. How far can it go?
Yeah.
Hey, that's pretty good, Marlene. No kidding. I mean, you're really a serious actress, and you play all those serious parts. But this time you get on our show and you insult me and the whole audience laughs. It's really terrific. I mean, from a legitimate actress, and she makes a joke and... Dean, we couldn't get Gloria Swanson.
Well, if that's the way you feel, I might just as well leave right now.
Oh, no, no, please don't leave. I was only kidding, Marlene, honest. I didn't mean any harm. Why do I hurt people this way? I'm just no good, that's all. Mistakes, mistakes, that's all I think.
There, there. Don't be sad.
Oh, I'm so unworthy of everybody. Why? Why must I be so difficult? I'm so young and terrible.
Dean, this boy is too much for me. I just don't know how to handle him.
Easy, baby. Just pick me up and hold me tight. That's all.
Please, Jerry, I'm afraid you have a lot to learn about the opposite sex.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Is that so? Mm-hmm. Well, you just ask the other girls about me. Ask Rita Hayworth. Ask Janet Leigh. Ask Selma Kranzfarb.
Who's Selma Kranzfarb?
She was my childhood sweetheart. But I learned her secret when they cut off her curls.
What was her secret?
She was really Sidney Kranzfarb.
Jerry, I don't think Marlene is at all amused by your ridiculous talk.
Oh, I'm having a wonderful time, Dean.
You know, Marlene, someday I'd like to visit your program, Cafe Istanbul. I heard it last week, and it's really terrific.
Say, why don't we bring a touch of Marlene's program to our show right now?
That should be fun. I'd like to see you two in one of those mysteries of the Near East.
Well, why wait? And away we go.
Ladies and gentlemen, at this time we are proud to bring you a drama filled with foreign intrigue and breathtaking suspense. Tonight's thrilling episode is fittingly called Cafe Turkestan. Our scene is the notorious Cafe Turkestan, the most fabulous night spot of the Middle East. It is here that we meet the characters in our play. There, out of her dressing room steps the exotic dancer, Michelle.
I am the dancer, Michelle.
Out of the black night steps the American, Rick Martin.
I am the American, Rick Martin.
And out of the kitchen steps the waiter, Harold.
I am the waiter. I am Harold.
Hey, how about some service over here? Let me speak to the owner.
What seems to be the trouble here? Oh, it's you. Hello, Ricky.
Hello, baby. Long time no see there.
Long time no dance.
Long time no embrace.
Long time no kiss.
Long time no have something to say.
Michelle, I've been here 20 minutes and this waiter still hasn't taken my order.
Be patient, Ricky. Remember, he's only got two heads. You know, Ricky... You know, Ricky, there's something suspicious about this waiter.
Yeah, he has a strange and shifty look. I think he's a spy.
What makes you think that I'm a spy?
You just swallowed a piece of paper... There's a map sticking out of your pocket. You have a bomb in your hand. You're wearing 3 medals from a foreign government, and I recognize you from a picture in the paper.
Yeah, but what makes you think I'm a spy?
Hey, now I remember him. He's that international spy, Mata Jerry.
This is Mata Jerry? He doesn't look like much of a spy to me.
Oh, yeah? Well, for your information, I happen to be pretty experienced in cloak and Dagmar.
You're experienced in cloak and dagger, not Dagmar.
Look, buddy, do I tell you where to get your experience?
No.
Come on, Martha Jerry, tell us your mission, or you will regret it.
I'll never tell. You can break every wheel in my body. You can put lighted matches under my cigarettes. You can pull out my toenails, all 12 of them. But I can tell you, do you hear? I can never tell you.
Why, you fool? Why can't you tell us your mission?
I forgot what it was.
I know what I'll do. I'll search him.
Don't you dare lay a hand on me.
Why not?
I'm ticklish. Oh.
It's no use, Ricky. He must be the penalty of spies.
You mean?
Yes. He must be eliminated.
All right. Mata Jerry, I'm going to put my arms around your neck and crush and crush and crush. Do you have any last requests?
You're going to put your arms around my neck and crush and crush and crush, and you want to know if I have any last requests?
That's right.
I sure have.
What is it?
Let her do it.
All right. Well, as the oriental sun sets in Turkestan, it rises again in Hollywood to shine on Jimmy Wallington.
Thank you, Dean. And now here's something of interest to everybody. For breathless moments, for your breathless moments,
chew Dentine, the gum with breathtaking flavor.
Dentine tastes so good.
Dentine freshens your breath.
Dentine helps keep your teeth sparkling clean and white.
Dentine, the gum with breathtaking flavor.
Before you go out and always after eating, drinking, smoking, refresh your breath with Dentine. You'll love Dentine chewing gum, for Dentine has a wonderful tingling, nippy flavor that lingers on and on. It's delicious. And remember, Dentine helps keep your teeth white, too. Keep Dentine handy. You'll enjoy refreshing your breath when you chew Dentine. So for breathless moments, for your breathless moments,
chew Dentine, the gum with breathtaking flavor.
Well, I guess everyone remembers their first date. Mine was with a cute little freshman at a high school dance, and I was mighty proud to be sitting across the table from the prettiest girl in the crowd. Well, it was kind of a good and a bad experience for me, because even if I did have the best-looking girl, I couldn't enjoy dancing with her. You see, at that time, I still hadn't learned to dance, so we just sat there holding hands across the table. I don't even remember her name, but if she happens to be listening, she might enjoy
hands across the table while the lights are low. Though you hush your lips, your fingertips tell me all I want to know. Hands across the table meet so tenderly, and they say in their little way that you belong to me.
Pretty.
Jerry, the word is prettily. I certainly sang that song prettily.
How can one man be so modest?
Speaking of modesty, boys, I understand you just finished a marvelous television program for the Heart Fund.
Well, we served the 16 and a half hour stretch in New York and loved every minute of it.
That must have been quite a show.
Oh, not really, Marlena, because we had a lot of wonderful people to help us make it a success.
And speaking of wonderful people, Marlena, maybe you're interested to know that there was one gal named Maria Riva who stuck with us for the whole show and did a tremendous job.
Do you know Maria, Marlena?
You might say she is related by marriage.
You mean like a cousin or something?
No, like a daughter or nothing.
Gee, imagine two such beautiful women in one family.
Why, thank you, Jerry. And thank you, Dean. I really enjoyed myself tonight.
Thank you, Marlena.
Yeah, we've had beautiful people on this program before, but... Wow!
Good night, boys.
Good night, Marlena.
Ladies and gentlemen, Marlena just mentioned our telethon for the Heart Fund, and the wonderful contributions from the people in the New York area made it a great success. We would like to commend the Heart Fund for doing a very wonderful thing. Knowing that the Muscular Dystrophy Association is a charity that is close to our hearts, very graciously offered MDA a percentage of all the monies raised, a beautiful gesture that will go far in giving hope to the sufferers of this dread disease. Remember, ladies and gentlemen, funds are needed desperately to help our scientists find a cure, so please give all you can. Send your contributions to MDA, New York 8, New York. That's MDA, New York 8, New York. Thank you.
Well, folks, till next week, this is Dean Martin.
And Jerry Lewis reminding you that our new picture, Sailor Beware, can now be seen at your local theater. We hope you'll go see it.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everyone.
The Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis Show, written by Ed Simmons and Norman Lear, produced and directed by Dick Mack, with music under the direction of Dick Stabile. By Anacin, for fast relief from pain of headache, neuritis, and neuralgia. By Dentine, the gum with breathtaking flavor. And by Beam and Pepsin, the gum that's great to chew and good for your digestion, too.
Hear Phil Harris and Alice Faye at a new time, 7 o'clock Sunday on NBC.
So did you hear who one of the writers on that show was, Lisa? The great Norman Lear.
Oh, yeah.
Norman Lear, who brought us so many television shows, including All in the Family.
Sure.
Although he did not create All in the Family. All in the Family, I am pretty sure, was a program that first launched in England. It was a British show. It was called something different. I don't know what the name of it was. And then they said, well, it was a super popular show in England. And so then they said to Norman Lear, can we do an American version of this? And then he created, you know, based on that show, All in the Family. And you know who was the first person that they reached out to play on All in the Family, to play Archie Bunker?
Before
Carol O'Connor.
Oh, we talked about that once, but I don't remember.
And he turned it down, and I think he probably wishes he didn't.
I bet that he regrets that.
Mickey Rooney.
Oh, yeah, we did talk about Mickey that.
Yeah, Mickey Rooney.
I forgot that.
I told you I was on an airplane with Mickey Rooney, and he didn't want to talk to me.
Well, I don't know why.
His wife was very nice. So it was Mickey Rooney, his wife, and then me.
Right.
And a movie came on. We were, watching.
Were you in first class?
Yeah. And I was flying back from L.A. And then I was like, wow, I'm sitting one seat away from a living legend.
Did you say that to him?
Yeah. And at first he was kind of nice. And then I guess I just probably,
annoyed.
Well, because I was like, asking him all kinds of stuff. Of course. I mean, it's Mickey Rooney. But his wife was super sweet, and she was, like, answering all my questions. Then when the movie came on, it was really convenient for him to just kind of ignore me and watch the movie. Yeah, I mean, it was like, no, he watched the movie. He was kind of like, okay, don't talk to me anymore, buddy. I'm watching this movie.
I feel like that sometimes,
I'm watching
too.
A movie. But it was my chance to talk to Mickey Rooney. I didn't bring this whole thing up. Like,
no,
hey, how come you didn't start? How come you didn't? Don't you wish you would have played... Archie Bunker.
You should have said that.
I probably wouldn't have gone over very well.
No, you should have done that.
I should have?
Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't have gone over well. All right, let's take a quick break, and then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater.